From the Land Grant University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It is the 21st day of March 2018. I'm Todd Gleason out of the office, traveling today to Marshall, Illinois, in the Clark County Extension Office, where we're just wrapping up or have just wrapped up a Will Ag Marketing Panel. If you'd like to schedule one sometime in the future, you can always do that. We're at the end, of course, of our meeting season at this point. Just check out my contact information. Information online at willag.org, willag.org. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets as it's related to trade with the executive director of the United States Grains Council. His name is Tom Slade. And a bit later in the program, we'll check all the agricultural weather. And we'll do that right here on this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. It comes to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media for this Wednesday afternoon. It's the 21st day of March 2018. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason out of the office, traveling today. Up next, we'll talk with the executive director of the U.S. Grains Council. The council, of course, develops export markets for U.S. barley, corn, sorghum, and related products, including DDGs and ethanol. Tom Slate, thanks for being with us. First, can you tell me what it's been like to be in Washington, D.C. over the last month or so?
It's been uncertain. Very, very, you know, kind of you come in every day and you fasten your seatbelt low and tight, you know, for expected turbulence. I mean, that's really how it goes. It really has been changing day by day, almost hour by hour. And so the atmosphere is very, very uncertain.
How were the aluminum and steel tariffs taken in D.C.?
Well, you know, it's a pretty interesting subject. Lots of opinions on it from ag. You know, we're concerned, very concerned. And so we ask ourselves, you know, what's the strategy here? What's the overall strategy here? We understand the underlying issues as it relates to the steel industry, but for agriculture, you know, we are at the front of the line on the retaliation list, and had meetings recently with the Korean Trade Ministry, and they made no bones about it. You know, grain, particularly corn, would be at the top of the retaliation list, that they're getting a lot of pressure from the National Assembly to do something about that in a retaliatory fashion. So, you know, you wait and see. I mean, there are talks scheduled here now on CORUS, on the Korea Free Trade Agreement. We're really, really going to be watching those closely.
Larry Kudlow, who is now the White House National Economic Council director, has been quoted as saying recently that he wonders if this is all part of the president's art of the deal, where he takes a lot, looks like he's going to be really forceful, and then begins to negotiate. He has already backed off, of course, on trade and tariffs for Mexico and Canada. Does that give you any pause for caution in the concern that might be in your mind at this point?
Well, a lot of people talk about that, the art of the deal, and is this all these moves part of a larger trade strategy to, you know, to bring major changes to, you know, a lot of it people feel are focused on China, to bring change to the China relationship, because that's where we have such an incredible, you know, trade deficit with. You know, I don't know. I think it works fine, maybe, you know, real estate, but boy, I tell you, in the multifaceted world we're working in right now, particularly on, you know, agriculture as it relates to manufacturing, as it relates to labor, as it relates to the services industry, as it relates to our overall performance as an economy, you really have to, you know, just hope that there is an overlying strategy here, because it makes us really nervous.
You mentioned that Korea put corn on the hit list. I would think that China would put soybeans on the hit list. Have you heard anything there?
Well, we keep hearing that rumor all the time. We've heard it pretty consistently, you know, throughout this year. You know, I don't know. My feeling is that it won't go there. I mean, strategically, it's you know, that's really shooting yourself in the foot to make a move on soybeans on China's part. But, you know, you keep seeing this trade relationship between the U.S. and China degrade on a daily basis. And at some point, you know, when are we going to get into, more serious quid pro quo? And that's when you look at, soybeans. Certainly, we've seen it in sorghum. We are dealing with it right now in sorghum. We dealt with it last year, the year before on DDGs. U.S. Grains Council, we can kind of write the book on what trade friction is like from China, because we have been clearly the point of the tip of the spear on this one. So we were deemed low-hanging fruit, and like I say, you know, the tension, the relationship is not getting better, and that's a relationship that it's so important for the U.S. to get right, our trade relationship with China.
Detail the sorghum dispute with me just a bit, because this actually started, I believe, before the tariffs were discussed by the president.
True. It started February 4th. Basically, the Ministry of Commerce from China instituted an investigation on both anti-dumping and countervailing duty, which is more or less anti-subsidy, you know, accusing the U.S. of investigating, I should say, that the U.S. is unfairly dumping sorghum into the Chinese market at sub-market prices, and that the U.S. is heavily subsidizing sorghum, both of which, you know, we are not true. And so where we are right now is that you cooperate fully with the Ministry of Commerce on this investigation, because you want to be able to have a fair forum in which to state your case to retain your negotiating rights, retain your rights down the line in terms of any possible other actions should China decide to go ahead and put some tariffs, either preliminary or permanent tariffs on U.S. sorghum.
Let's switch countries at this point. Mexico, which is the number one importer of U.S. corn, how much at risk might that market be?
Well, we've already seen some erosion in terms of our, you know, competitors, mainly Brazil, you know, picking up small points of market share. Okay, so, you know, when you look at the big picture of things, yeah, we're still the dominant supplier. We're still having good business with Mexico. They're still buying our corn. But there's been an erosion of that, you know, 98% market share. We might slip down into 90% market share, you know, lose, you know, 10 points on market share. Doesn't sound like a lot, but, you know, the thing I always worry about is that when you look at the daily and weekly amount of grain going down into being pulled by demand in Mexico, that's going to have an impact. It's going to have an impact on basis levels somewhere down the line. And so we've already seen it probably a little bit. So we've seen erosion. We've seen agitated customers actually pay more for Brazilian corn than for U.S. corn. That really got our attention big time when we saw that happening. And plus, you're seeing renewed infrastructure investment, particularly in places like Veracruz and where Brazilian corn can more easily access that market by water, the Mexican market by water, as opposed, say, to Western Mexico. So you have increased investment by our competitors. You have sales, you know, starting to erode market share. You even have purchases made at prices above U.S. Rates. So all of that, you know, we're going to have to fight for every last bushel we sell down there. We still have competitive advantage in a lot of ways, but it has been eroded, and certainly that's got our concern. We think NAFTA is going in a better direction now. The negotiations on NAFTA are going in a better direction, and so we're just going to, again, pay real close attention here in the next few rounds and make sure people know.
Who's making the investment in the waterborne access for Brazilian corn?
Yeah, but that would be the Brazilians themselves, and I think some Mexican investment and even some other outside investment, perhaps even some money from overseas. I'm not really sure where, but, you know, there is definitely looking at that port infrastructure.
And how recent was the purchase that you were discussing, which was simply agitated and said, fine, I'll pay a higher price for Brazilian corn?
That was in late January, so not too long ago.
That would seem scary enough when somebody's that motivated to change a port of entry.
Yeah, and so we haven't seen that to be a trend But again, I think that we have opened the door for the competition. Let's put it that way.
How hard is it to get back anything that is given up once it's lost?
It's always a lot tougher to get it back after you've created the market. So, you know, we're always leery of that. It's really tough. It'll take years. On the same token, there's a lot of demand yet in Mexico that we can still develop, you know, grow that market. That's still going to be a very important market for us. I think we'll still be the predominant supplier. But by golly, you know, we were in a dominant supplying situation, and we want to make sure when they build these investments and these feed mills and so forth that they look at they can count on the U.S. to be able to give them that just-in-time delivery that gave us such a clear competitive advantage. When you start investing in storage facilities at ports so they can bring in larger ships instead of, you know, smaller ships or rail cars or even trucks on a just-in-time basis, that really starts to erode our competitiveness.
And finally, Tom, if you have any information on this, can you talk about the Chinese pork industry and its potential to develop an ethanol industry, whether that be importing ethanol for use in their gasoline supply or just a local ethanol industry for grinding corn?
Well, I think that, you know, China certainly is looking long and hard on that the U.S. ethanol industry and what ethanol has done both for rural economies in the United States and especially for the environment. And I think that they have taken very, very good notes and are very impressed with what has happened here in the United States. There seems to be, a decision coming up that they were going to try to go to E10 type basis in China. Not a mandate, but sort of a guideline. And I think they know, China realizes they must do something about their pollution problems. Absolutely. It's sort of the new, not the new now, you know, President Xi from China has been long made this ever since he first started here about 5 years ago, 5-6 years ago, investing in things that are going to improve the quality of life for Chinese citizens. And that's going to include, you know, the air that they breathe, because that's very pretty doggone important, right? And so and water. But I mean, so there's certainly a strong push within China to do something about that, strong push to utilize excess capacity, their storage capacity, or not storage capacity, their overcapacity, oversupply is the word I'm searching for, on corn right now to better manage their corn stock situation. So there's very clear interest there. But again, it's an industry that is growing. I think that we're working with them on some of sharing experiences on this. I think it's something that could be a win-win for both our countries.
And their hog industry?
Well, you know, always look at hog industry about they've had their ups and downs. They get into a period where they're really growing super fast, and then they sort of demand sort of tapers off and it cools off. The hog industry cools off. I think we're kind of in a growth period again. We're starting to get into a growth period again, whereby you're starting to see, you know, with the world economy sort of improving as last year, things are a little bit better. So continue growth in middle class growth, middle class income growth in China that fuels this sort of consumption, particularly for pork. We're feeling like they might be into a stage now where they're going to start growing again. So that's good news. Good news for both U.S. grain and for U.S. Pork if we don't get into a full bore trade battle with them.
That's Tom Slade. He's the executive director of the United States Grains Council. You can learn more about the council online. The address there is grains.org. That's grains.org. Speaking of visiting websites, do visit our website at willag.org, willag.org. There you can hear our daily agricultural programming on demand anytime you'd like, and you can check out our calendar of events. One more Will Ag panel is scheduled for the winter meeting season, early spring meeting season, I suppose, at this time. That's on the Monday after Easter, April the 2nd. We'll be at the Champaign County Farm Bureau. Details are online at willag.org. Well, let's stay in Washington, D.C., but we'll switch topic areas from trade to ethanol. A top agricultural official in the White House says the Trump administration is seeking the best resolution possible regarding the renewable fuel standards as it's related to RINs. Ray Starling, Special Assistant to the President for Agriculture, spoke to attendees of the AgriPulse Ag and Food Policy Summit in Washington, D.C. The ag sector, he says, is at odds with the oil sector regarding RIN prices as part of the RFS. Starling says Agriculture Secretary Perdue is working tirelessly to preserve the president's commitment to the RFS, while understanding others are not a fan of the RFS.
Secretary Perdue and Deputy Secretary Sinski have been tireless in trying to think about creative ways and work with the industry on creative ways that we can preserve the president's commitment to the RFS, but also to acknowledge that not everyone is a fan of the program and how it's functioning at the moment. With that said, I also want to actually praise Administrator Pruitt over at EPA and his staff. As you know, on a number of issues, he is a real friend of farmers and agriculture and agribusiness.
The oil sector claims RIN prices are harming the industry and costing jobs, pointing to a failed Pennsylvania refinery. Agriculture sector representatives are quick to point out the troubled investing past of that particular facility. That leaves Starling to say that there is a search for a win-win situation.
To be transparent, we have been in a period of discernment where we've essentially gone to the refiner industry and said, look, what can you put on the table that might give our renewable community some comfort, even if we were to negotiate some sort of truce here? And we've certainly gone to the ag sector and say, what can you put on the table that might help us address this perceived issue?
He says the conversations will continue and will include representations from all sides.
As you might imagine, those ideas that we've gotten back while we've gotten closer together, they don't necessarily directly overlap. And over the course of the next few days, we'll be looking at what those groups came up with. We'll be having more conversations, but the industry is going to be involved in that. We're going to reach out to folks, and it's certainly my intention to avoid any surprises there.
That's Ray Starling. He's a special assistant to President Trump covering agriculture. He spoke today at an AgriPulse event in Washington, D.C. By the way, if you'd like to learn more about the controversy as it relates to RINs, you can do that on the Farm Doc Daily website and see how it might play out, according to Jonathan Kappas and Scott Irwin, in an article published on the 7th day of March called Deal Making on the RFS. Just follow the North Star. Here are their concluding thoughts. They say controversy continues to surround the RFS. However, negotiators have limited options in front of them to resolve the dispute administratively. Courts, they say, have not granted EPA expansive definitions of its authorities under the statute, requiring it instead to adhere to the primary market forcing intent of Congress. This is the North Star of the RFS, write Kappas and Irwin, and must guide EPA's interpretations of the statute and actions implementing it. It should also guide negotiators. At its core, this is rooted in a fundamental principle of lawmaking under the Constitution. It is therefore likely they believe that any significant changes to the RFS would have to come from Congress via legislation that amends the statute and could not be done from the Oval Office or from U.S. EPA's Administrator's Office. You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. Drew Lerner is now here from World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City. Drew, we've been very worried about the hard red winter wheat, especially in the Southwest. I know they've gotten some rainfall. What's your assessment?
Well, the rain that has fallen so far has really missed the heart of the drought area. Now, we did get some rain in central Kansas, and that was extremely important. Some 1 to 1.6-inch amounts occurred in several counties around the Hutchinson area and southward towards the Oklahoma border. There were other areas that picked up on a quarter to three-quarters of an inch of rain. But the southwestern, maybe one dozen counties in Kansas did not get any moisture at all or nothing meaningful. And the same is true for much of the region to the south into West Texas and eastern New Mexico. So a large part of crop country there is still hurting for moisture. We are moving into a better weather pattern that's going to favor these storm systems more often. I am fully convinced that Nebraska and Kansas and Colorado will do well in the next few weeks. That includes southwest Kansas, although southwest Kansas will not do as well as central Kansas. But the Texas Panhandle, it'll be a little bit more of a struggle for them, also for far western Oklahoma. But both areas should see some precipitation, and it may be as early as the last days in March. We'll probably end up with a tenth, five-tenths of an inch, some local three-quarter-inch totals in those last couple of days in March before we go into April. April will bring us some other opportunity for rain, though. And I do think the situation is encouraging, but it's not ideal. And some of these areas will stay low on subsoil moisture for a very long time.
It is often said you can kill a wheat crop six or seven times before you harvest it. We'll wait and see once it comes out what kind of damage has been done from the dry weather conditions and the cold and lack of snowfall all winter long. The other place we need to check in on that's been very dry, we've talked about all our winter long, is the growing season in Argentina. They're wrapping it up. What are conditions like today?
Well, we did get a little bit of rain earlier this week, which was extremely helpful, but only in a very narrow banded area. That was from southernmost portions of Cordoba into northernmost parts of Buenos Aires. A very rich crop country, mind you, but not big enough area of rain to impact the crop in a major way. We do have follow-up rain coming up here for this Friday and Saturday, and that event should help to fill in the gaps for the areas that didn't get much rain over the weekend, but it's still not going to be enough. We're surrounded by warm weather, and it's late in the season. It's really going to be hard for these crops to respond in a major way, but nevertheless, a couple tenths to eight-tenths of an inch of moisture, some local totals to an inch and a third, will occur in Cordoba and western Buenos Aires, as well as a big part of Santa Fe. Northern parts of Santa Bay, we'll probably see some 1 to 2 and maybe some local 2 to 3 inch amounts. That'll be good for them. And the northernmost parts of the country in general will do better than anybody else. But it is kind of late. No follow-up moisture after this. It'll be dry most of the period from Sunday all the way through the end of next week. So this is the one and only chance, I think, for them to get some meaningful relief.
And finally, if you could check in very quickly on parts of Europe for me.
Yeah, Europe has been exceptionally wet here recently. The ground is saturated in just about all of the continent. Germany and Poland are the exception, but most of the west and south, just way too wet. We need to see some drying come up here in the next few weeks in order to get into the fields and start this planting, which should be underway already in Spain, but has been on hold.
Hey, thanks so much.
Have a good day.
You too. That, of course, is Drew Lerner. He is with World Weather Incorporated in Kansas City and helps us wrap up this Wednesday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Extension's Todd Gleason.